When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bat Flip, episode 139. Going to continue our positional previews for the 2023 fantasy baseball season. As you can tell from the catchers last week, there's three moves today. Throw it out the window. So we'll go to first base today, and this is why we do a review of the preview later in the draft season to let you know all the fun stuff and things. Beforehand, though, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric, and my coach is always on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. Toby, how we doing, man?
We're doing pretty good, Bubba. I was in Tahoe this weekend, and we got buried in snow.
Nice.
And it was like digging 4 feet of snow out of the car. It was rough, but we made it. We made it for the podcast. That is all that matters.
Beautiful. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, they got a lot of snow. Needed snow, but a lot of snow. Because I know I got where I live. I don't get a lot of rain. I have like an inch and a half. I know other areas got 3 to 5. And we live where I live, not a lot of rain happens. So
yeah,
it was some nasty storms. Trees were down. And then I saw the news, Tahoe area up that way got a lot of snow. So a lot of people are going to be heading that way for the holidays. That'll be fun.
Yeah. It's a good preview of the first base position. Very cold.
Yes. It's a lot of fun and excitement right out the gate. And then it gets cold and dark really quick.
For sure. You got to dig yourself out.
Dig yourself out of the hole if you missed on the early first baseman. That is exactly what's going to happen here. So let's just kind of get into it and do like we do each and every time here. The 2022 season, we saw the big guys, you know, Freeman hit for average. Power wasn't there. Probably not too worried about that. Olsen's, you know, average regress, but still at the power. You had Pete Alonso doing amazing things. Paul Goldschmidt, we kind of hit on it last week and other times. He proved once again while he's just a monster. Yavarito, the top's very heavy, but what did you see from 2022 that, is there anything I should say that you see in 2022 that will affect your 2023 drafting of the first base position?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting, you know, just kind of going through everybody, and you had sent me the outline initially, and you had mentioned like, hey, if there's not any of these like middle tier guys you want to talk about, like, you know, like we can skip over some of them. And that's how I feel about the middle tier of first baseman. I feel like that whole tier, I just don't really want a part of them at all. Like there's nothing that really stands out about them. And I just kind of want to steer clear of that. And I think, you know, whereas previously, maybe I remember last year, there was some really high caliber players early on, but kind of the goal was to wait a little bit, you know, because you had this really nice kind of middle tier of guys. Well, as all often happens with the middle tier of any position, a lot of those guys really didn't come through. And so I feel like this year it's either, you know, kind of, I don't know if feast or famine is like the best description, but like you either got to get in there early, or I would suggest waiting a little bit and maybe taking a gamble or a flyer on one of these guys who maybe underperformed what they should have, or maybe underperformed expectations from last year. And hopefully, you know, the market misses or doesn't adjust. That would be how I would approach the position generally, because like I said, I couldn't even find two guys that I really wanted to chat about in 11 through 20.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough. A lot of the guys that you're talking about the pocket last year is like Reese and Votto, Josh Bell. There's like five or six of them. We're like, okay, yeah, we can wait and get them. And it might've been 50-50 if it worked out, probably 30-70. Like Reese worked out. The rest are kind of make your argument because Votto sure didn't and some others. And then you look at the top 10 now. Reese is into the top 10. CJ Cron was in that group. He's in the top 10. Nathaniel Lowe is in the top 10. So a lot of these guys we were kind of waiting on last year, they've moved up in ADP. And that means the trash has moved out of the top 10. And that's, like you said, makes it very tricky. And, you know, as the season goes on, ADPs fluctuate. We might see some changes take place. But looking at it now, I don't see a ton that changes place. And that kind of makes me want to go early too. Like I did a Gladiator draft and I made a point to just take Pete Alonso to get all his power, and I'll build stolen bases later. Just do it. The NFPC 50 I've been doing, I think I either got Reese Hoskins or Jose Abreu, one of those two. It's kind of like the catcher's position. I want one of like the top 10. Like, just give me one of those or we're going to be in trouble, because this doesn't make you feel warm and fuzzy. So we'll go through these. We'll see what changes come, you know, February when we go over the rest of these again. But I don't see much at first base. Catchers, we already have changes. First base, not a lot out there. So it's going to be an interesting one, to say the least. And it's definitely a position we've talked about in the past, and like I've rehashed time and time again. I keep doing it because I'm like a creature of habit, and it's not the smart move. Every year I'm like, okay, what do I need to prove on my teams? And it seems to be power time and time again. And so that's why another reason I took Pete Alonso. Just get the power, I'll find stolen bases. Like, I'll just find it and move on from there. And I need to start doing that more, because first base, you get like your Goldie gets you a few steals. Vlad actually got you a few steals. Freddie gets you a few. Most of these guys aren't stealing bags. So just get the thump and move on. That's kind of the way I'm starting to look at it at first base. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. All right, let's have fun. And we're going to kick it off with Toby's favorite first baseman, his favorite one. And he gave us a little preview of this episode at the end of
a preview review
episode, something like that. Yeah. At the end of the catcher's episode, to get you guys a cliffhanger for this episode. Number one is Vladimir Guerrero Jr., first baseman off the board, going around pick 13 in NFPC 50s since August 15th. So there's been eight drafts since then. So an okay sample size. We look at Vladito, you know, 32 home runs last year for the 48 home run season, did steal eight bags, hit 274. So the 2021 season of the Tour of Shame, or whatever Toby was calling it, he didn't quite live up to those standards, but still in the end, 32, 90, 97 with eight steals and 274 is pretty darn solid. And people have him going number one at first base right now. I do not. I have him going high, not number one. But you said you might be in for Shame of Tour or whatever you called it, number two coming up. So what do you got on Vladito?
Yeah, everybody saddle up. It's Tour of Shame 2.0. Tour of Shame. I think is going to be hitting the road here shortly. I don't love Vlad Jr. this year. You know, and I think the reason for that is many reasons. I mean, again, I don't think he's bad. I think he's gotten past the point where any of us can make an argument that he is bad. I will not make that argument. I think he's very good. I just don't understand drafting him at this point. So let's take a look at his batting average. You know, 4 years in the majors, 2,161 plate appearances. You know, 272, 262, 311, 274. All right. Now we're not dealing with like full samples here, but let's combine 2019 and 2020. All right. 24 home runs, 48 home runs, 32 home runs. All right. The strikeout rate hasn't changed. The only year with a walk rate outside of the 8% is 2021 at 12.3%. ISOs, 162, 199, 290, 205. BABIPs, 308, 282, 313, 289. Ground ball rates, 49.6, 54.6, 44.8, 52.1. So you can go down the list of every metric. And 2021, just in spite of me, was the only one where he really stands out. So the question is, I think, and a lot, because the projections love him too, and I love projections, but the projections have him for 40 home runs. And the reason they have him for 40 home runs is because they have him at a home run per plate appearance of 6%, which is the highest of any first baseman in the league. Now, last year, he was at 4.5%. So I think a lot of what it boils down to is if you take out the 8 hits, you know, between 32 home runs and 40 home runs, then his batting average is probably pretty close to the 270s like it was last year, right? And so I think the major question is his power, is his true power 2021, 2022, or somewhere in between? And my argument would be that 2022 is a much better reflection of the true talent level of Vlad Jr., particularly with, you know, the change in the ball that we've seen. I just, you know, 2021 sticks out like a sore thumb in every regard, including power. And so for me, this is just a really long-winded way of saying, I think 2022, excuse me, is Vlad Jr. I think that's his true talent level, more accurate than 2021. And I think with the first baseman going later, I think there's an argument to be made that there's no point in picking him at this point.
Interesting. Because to me, 274, 32, 8, that seems like a pretty nice safe line if that's what you tell me I'm getting. That seems pretty good. Especially as we talk about how bad first base is. If I can pencil it in right now, that seems pretty good to me. So before I give,
is that good for like eighth pick?
That's the problem. That's what I'm saying.
He's like, that's what I'm saying.
He's 13th overall right now. But as we talked about,
13. Sorry.
So, by the way, say you want either Vlad, Freddie, Pete, or Paul Goldschmidt. The Beatles, basically. Say you want one of those four, and you're picking at the back end of round one, because by the end of round two, they're all gone. Do you take Vlad right there, or do you make sure you get Pete or Goldie on the way back? Do you make sure you have one of them? Or are you literally going, nope? Because then what it comes down to is if you don't get one of them, this is why it's a conversation I bring up. If you don't get one of them, Matt Olson goes in round three, then you get to wait a bit after that. But you start playing chicken because we talk about how bad the position is. So a guy like yourself, who we know likes to go pitching early, likes to go JTR early, is that why you're just like, I'm not even touching any of these guys pretty much, and I'm just going to jump to the back of the top 10 potentially?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think of those four where they're going, I think Freddie Freeman is of interest.
Yeah, I took him.
I think Freeman underperformed last year in the power department.
100%.
And I think that I don't know why he wouldn't regress in a positive way. You know, he's obviously a year older, but I think if you look at Freeman, you know, he hit 21 home runs last year. And
we'll get to him in a minute.
Okay.
He's next. Now I want to give a slight argument for Vlad. Because I'm not disagreeing. I actually took Freddie over Vlad. I already told you he's not my number one. I have no problem with him going like at the top, one of these top four guys. I could see the argument because I do think his floor is extremely safe, barring like an injury. And one reason why I like his floor so much, in the shortened 2020, he played all 60 games. Played 161 in 2021, 160 in 2022. That's an at-bat accumulation 101. Nearly 700 or more at-bats the last two seasons. We preach that like over and over again. That's a beautiful thing, especially at a very ugly first base position, especially on a Toronto Blue Jays team that, yes, they made some adjustments to their lineup, still going to be pretty darn good. Like Teoscar not being their stinks, but going to be pretty darn good. So he plays pretty much every day. I'm going to use that in his favor right now. You mentioned some other things. If you want to talk, you know, Statcast numbers, best max EV since the 2019 season, 118.4. 11% barrels, not as good as 15% in 2021, but still second best for his career. Hard hit rate still over 50%. Like, he's still doing those things. The biggest difference is you mentioned the ground balls, which was an argument for you in 2020 or 2021 when he went bonkers. but went back to 52% last year, and he lost 6% on the fly balls. Literally, let's just say he gets 3% more fly balls, because his home run to fly ball rate, you're not going to get 26.5 again, but if he's close to 20% he was, you give him 6% more fly balls, maybe you're in the 36-ish range of homers. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be the guy we saw in 2021, but the floor he brings is amazing. And when we get to Freddie, I'm going to be on your side on Freddie being over him for one major reason. But they're basically, if you look at ADP right now, they're going 13.13, 13.75. So I think everybody's pretty much like right about the same here, and that's where I kind of land. So I just want to at least give some pub, because I don't disagree with you in what you said, because he's not the, I don't think he's the guy that the projections have. I'm really curious to see like what the bat comes out with, and then ATC, like to see if there's, because some players we will see big variances, some we don't see much at all. So I'm curious to see, because Vladdy's kind of a polarizing guy where we might see some. That could be a fun one. But I still think there's still validity to Vlad. It's just what you, that's why I wanted to get you to say it though. Very tough to take him in the first round. Very tough. Yeah. To do. And that's the biggest argument for him. I think he's still very good. And I think more than anything is the floor and the playing time. Anyone can get hurt, so don't give me that line, people. But the floor and the playing time he's done for 3 straight years, I think is pretty darn solid. And that's something that I would go to bat with, basically. And that would make me feel a little more comfortable if I had to take him. So that's
my yeah. And I think that that is the best argument, is that the ground ball rate, you know, which is 49.5% for his career, that is, you know, the 3%, 4%, you know, increase in the, in or decrease in ground ball rate, increase in fly ball and line drive rate, corresponding, like that, I think is the best argument for the power being a little better.
Yeah.
But I think when you look at, you know, yeah, but I don't know. And maybe it is the middle ground, right? Maybe, in between 21 and 22 is what he really is. And then, you know, then he's, I mean, again, he's not going to be, I don't think he's going to be a bad pick.
Yeah.
I just don't love him.
No, it's a fun discussion. Cause at least like we're talking about it like normal people, where a lot of people it's like, no, he sucks, you can't take him, blah, blah, blah. Or it's like, at least we're both giving like arguments for it, like that makes sense, that like actually looking at something. So that's why I just wanted to bring it up. Plus we don't want to talk about a lot of guys later, so let's spend some time on Vlad. He's fun. And we'll go there. Let's go to Freddie. Freddie's, like I said, going, he's the second first baseman off the board, essentially going like maybe a half a pick, if you can do that in real life, behind Vladito. And he was awesome. And I agree with what you already said, you know, 21 homers, but 325, 117 runs, 100 RBIs. It's, you can't take out the short in 2020. That's 3 straight full seasons over 113 runs scored. He's got 100 or more RBIs in 2 out of 3. And it's that darned old batting average, Toby. It's that batting average. That's where I'll give you the floor here, but batting average is why I have him above all the first basemen. He's essentially a 300 hitter outside of like a 295. And with the average batting average in baseball dropping to like 235, you can plug in a guy that hits you 300. And I think he'll be back to the 30 plus home run guy. That's pretty tremendous to me.
Yeah. I find it very difficult to be against Freddie Freeman this year. I just think, like, you know, like you mentioned, the batting average is great. Was he maybe a little bit higher than he will be this year? Yes, at 325. Yeah. You can't project anywhere. You can't really project close to that. But I feel much more confident in his 293 projection than the 292 projection that we have for Vlad Jr. And then I would argue, like, when you look at Freeman's season last year, you know, he had 52 barrels and only 21 home runs. And so when you look at that, his home run to barrel rate last year was 40.4%, which is one of, there's only one player outside of Freeman who had close to the plate appearances that Freeman had, that had a lower home run to barrel rate. And so I think that's one of the reasons why you see him, you know, struggling in the way, you know, from the power department last year. But even if you give him just the 21, the 25 home run, whatever it is, with the 300 batting average, the runs and RBI that he's going to get you, and then the steals, again, not counting on 13, but, you know, the projection at 9, you give me that line and I love that line. Obviously, you need to factor in the the fact that like with the landscape it is, home runs are more valuable and steals may be a little bit less valuable. So obviously that I think is something you need to take into consideration. But batting average is still a very very scarce category. And to get the volume at that batting average from Freeman, I feel a lot more confident in that than I do with Vlad or the other first baseman. So
there aren't many five category studs at first base, especially perennially five category. Like you can almost, there's not many, like Vlad got 8 steals last year. You can't pencil in most guys for 5 to 6+ every year at first base. And Freeman, he had 13 last year. He's had double digits a few times. He wouldn't be shocked if he put up a 30-10 season and hit 305 and had 100 and 100. Like that is outstanding at first base. Like that is really, really good. That's good at any position, but especially at first base, that's like pretty darn good. So I'm with you on everything you said. Like the batting average is the biggest thing. He's going to supply power and it allows you to do, because as the drafts go on, at least in I've done 2 or 3 drafts now, you start to see like we talk about it, like, you know, the five category guys leave, of course, and it's 4 categories. The main power dudes later on, there's a lot of warts on that thing. So if you can get a Freddie up top or something, that just helps out so much on so much of it. So, yeah, give me Freddie. I have nothing really more to add there except he's just elite. It's going to be his second year in L.A., so he should probably be more comfortable. Like I like a lot about Freddie. I guess the one argument we'll probably hear this offseason, I don't care about it, but with the balanced schedule, he won't play as many games in Coors, but I'll still take what he gets in Coors and walk away. So that'll be fun there. All right, the third first baseman off the board. This is a guy that is a fan favorite, show favorite. Big Meat Pete the Polar Bear. Big guy. ADP of 20.5 over the last 8 drafts. Third first baseman off the board. And my complaint about Pete a few years back when he hit 231 is I was like, he can't hit for average. Well, he hit 262 with 37 bombs in 2021. He hit 271 with 40 bombs last year. And I have made my apologies. He even stole 5 bags last year. I've made my apologies. I've already drafted him, like I said. I'm a huge fan of Pete because this guy, if he plays, he played 160 games last year, 152 the year before. As long as he plays like he should, I don't see how he hasn't hit at least 35 home runs every single season. And you can, again, similar to why I kind of liked Vlad's argument, if you just pencil that in and he's not going to crush you in batting average and stuff, and you're getting him around later than Vlad, looks pretty juicy to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great summation of Big Meat Pete. Again, like I think with, you know, kind of the Vlad comp and some of the other guys, obviously Vlad, you know, batting average wise, I think is going to be better than Alonso. But, you know, Big Meat Pete has improved. He's got his K percentage under 20%. You know, 18.7% last year. Yeah. And then he's just continuously improving. And then, you know, you know, the runs in RBI are probably going to be pretty similar as long as they're playing. The steals are going to be pretty similar. So it's really a balanced batting average game, but I'd take Alonso on the over for the home runs, you know, all day. Yep. So yeah, I think what you said is a pretty good just summation of just at least from a value perspective, preferring Big Meat Pete versus Vlad Jr.
Yeah.
But not everything's about Vlad Jr. You know,
it's not, but it makes it fun because
it does.
Everyone's going to remember the fact that Toby doesn't like, that'll be the headline. They won't understand what you said. It'll be Toby doesn't like Vlad again.
I know. Well, to be honest with you, I missed it. I missed posting those GIFs. It gave me, as you guys have seen, my Twitter presence has declined, you know, dramatically since the Tour of Shame 2.0. And I really just want to get back tweeting.
Between Tour of Shame, Hansel not being around, like it's Eddie Rosario's down season. You just had a rough go of it last season. We gotta get some new Toby brand guys on here for 2023.
You gotta go back. You gotta keep on going back to that well. Oh boy. The well of self-loathing.
Boxberger, that was another good one. Yeah, it's like you was a good one. You have your repertoire for some of them for sure.
Yeah.
All right, fourth first baseman off the board. It's pretty crazy to say fourth. It makes sense after what we just talked about, but Paul Goldschmidt going up at 28.25, the end of round 2 in these 15-team DCs. And, you know, when we previewed last year, Toby, we were like, wow, 294, 31, 12, 102. Now, like, that's an amazing year. You know, he's going to be 34. He's going to be good, but not that good. He was, Toby, at 317 with 35 homers, 7 stolen bases, 106 and 115. That's 2, 4, 5 straight years over 30 home runs, 6 of the last 7 over 30 home runs. Getting older, keeps doing it. What are your thoughts on Paul Goldschmidt? Because you're waiting for that other shoe to drop, and everyone's arguing, well, St. Louis is a bad hitter's ballpark. Didn't stop him. So, yeah.
Yeah, it did not stop him. I wish I had more of him. The one league I had him in, I did end up winning, which was really nice. He's always been good. At some point in time, he's not going to be good anymore, like he was the second half of last season. But he's really good. I think that, he's a tough one. I mean, the projections are a lot lower, or decently lower on him. I think the batting average, which makes sense. BABIP at 368 last year was the highest since 2015. So I can see the batting average going down. He's in the middle of that order. He's getting another little helper in there and Wilson Contreras. So, I like Goldie, but I don't think I probably take him here. I think last year, you know, with you know where he was going and falling, I think in drafts towards the end of the end of the draft season, just because there was a glut of first basemen that people liked in those kind of middle rounds. But not as into him right here, because I think a little bit of question about the power and the batting average. Another year older. Again, doubt Goldie at your own risk, but there's a lot more downside this year, I think, than there has been in the past. And the one thing I'll say too, and as I do this analysis, is it's incomplete in the sense that, you know, I do not have multiple projection systems to aggregate and determine what that dollar value is using SGP from last year. So factor that in as I talk through these pieces. But I have some questions about the risk reward of him at this juncture.
Yeah, we had the same questions last year. I think they're still viable because, like, he was going to be 34. Now he's going to be 35. Like, Father Time eventually catches up. And I think last year, even you still got him at, like, a fifth-round discount or so. You weren't having to pick. Now you're in the top two round. So now you have to really sit there and go, like, let me pull up overall ADP because I just have the first base up here. So when you look at Goldie now, I picked 28.25. Like, you have Clase, Alcantara, Edwin Diaz going right before him. Right after him, we got Lindor, McClanahan, DeGrom, JTR is right there. So it makes you there's a lot of pitchers. You got JTR and then some shortstops hanging around there. So it just kind of makes you, I guess, your strategy. Do I want a first baseman early? Because like we talked about, after Goldie, you can wait another round or so and get Matt Olson, and then it just drops off pretty quick. And there's still some talent, but it's a lot. You get a few rounds until it gets there. So I think if you want one of the big catchers, you want one of the top four. I think Olson's obviously still very good. I'm not going to downplay that, but I think there's lots of – he's got one of the bigger ceiling floor situations and probably the whole thing we talk about right here. Where I think these top four guys, outside of maybe Father Time with Goldie, all four bring a pretty solid floor to battle for you, which you'd hope early in the draft, but it's pretty darn good. All right. The aforementioned Matty Olson at the fifth first baseman at the board, 42.88 ADP. And it's fun, though, because you look at Mins and Maxes. He's gone as high as 31, 5 picks after Goldie. So he's some people do the whole, oh, no, I didn't get one of the top four guys, and I pushed up. I got to get one of the top five. And now you're talking to Matt Olson on the 2-3 turn. It's a little spicy, folks. A little spicy on that one. But Olson coming off a 240 season after that 271 average. 34 homers in his first year in Atlanta. We saw a lot more. The batting average, the strikeout rate kind of came back up, not to the craziness, but back to kind of what we'd think with Olson, Toby. So what's your thought on Matt Olson? Because he was expensive for Matt Olson's standards last year from the past, so I wasn't really in on him. He's kept that price tag this season.
Yeah, I think last year is a pretty good articulation of who Matt Olson is. And that's a very good player. I just, you know, again, it's one of those, I'm just not sure this is the spot where I want to be taking that profile.
No.
And so I think he's good. I think he'll do what he did last year, this year. And that's pretty good, but I don't know if I want to take it.
Yeah. When I see Matt Olson's profile, people have listened to this show for any duration of time. There's a guy we're going to talk about in five picks that is that profile or better than that profile. And I will go to bat for that time and time again. So there's a reason why I would probably never have Matt Olson on my roster when I can wait a couple rounds and get some candy to take to the movies. And so we'll talk about him in a minute, but Reese's Pieces, if for those that don't listen to the show.
Wow. It's a great candy, a very underrated candy.
Very underrated.
Loses a lot of publicity because of its belonging to the Reese's family.
To the peanut butter cup. Yeah. It just gets kind of like the redhead, it's like the redheaded stepchild and just gets totally ignored.
It's kind of bullshit if you ask me, because like, I would rather
people prefer M&Ms. I'd rather have a Reese's Pieces any day of the week.
Would be eating Reese's Pieces all day long when given the choice between Reese's Pieces and Reese's peanut butter cups. Now don't get me wrong. I am a fan of Reese's peanut butter cups.
Oh yeah.
But Reese's Pieces have a special taste.
Yes. And you can put them on frozen yogurt, on ice cream, all very tasty right there. And they're kind of sneaky, where the peanut butter cups, they crumble. It's still good, but that sneakiness of the Reese's Pieces. And for those that like to get real crazy, I know people like to put like chocolate chips and stuff in their popcorn. Go put some Reese's Pieces in your popcorn. You'll be very happy with that. Very happy.
That is unbelievable.
Just going to throw it out there.
Okay. I have a little bit of a sad story.
Yeah.
So a few weeks ago, I was driving home. And whenever I drive home, I fly into Sacramento. And whenever I drive home and it's just me, I always stop at Dairy Queen the way home.
Got to get a Blizzard.
The one in Roseville, right?
Gotcha. Yeah.
I mean, you got it. They're actually, I mean, I've been to a lot of Dairy Queens in my day. The Dairy Queen in Roseville, California is easily, the staff there are incredible. Just wonderful people and just a great place to get a dessert. So I'm there and I'm ordering and I'm like the usual, which is a Blizzard, you know, medium or large, with Reese's peanut butter cups and extra, extra, extra Reese's. You got to emphasize the extra when you're saying it. So extra, extra, extra Reese's. I'm not kidding. You cannot put too much Reese's peanut butter cups in here, but I wanted to mix it up a little bit. And so I was like, hey, could you do Reese's peanut butter cups, a lot of them, but then could you also throw in some Reese's pieces? And do you want to know what they told me?
They said no.
They said, we don't have Reese's pieces anymore.
Oh, we got to find you a Foster Freeze or something. Then they just lost business. It's unacceptable.
No, I mean, I would never turn away from Dairy Queen.
I know.
But that is, I mean...
Well, I guess you're going to have to stop at the gas station next to Dairy Queen and go pick up some Reese's Pieces and put them in there yourself.
Well, that's a really good idea.
That might be the next option.
I'll probably do that next time.
Now, so was that the same order you got in Arizona 2 years ago?
Yes. Always the same
one. It was so good because I got the same thing. I said, that sounds amazing, Toby. I want the same thing. It's so good.
So good.
Yeah, it was perfect. You know what else is so good, at least to so many people on Twitter? So many people.
Yeah.
Vinny Pascantino, because we like a good Italian breakfast, apparently. And before we start maybe throwing some shade around here, I like Vinny P. I think he's a talented player. Problem for me is the sixth first baseman off the board at pick 90. Not sure I'm there yet with Vinny P. Maybe I'm not seeing this properly, but he did hit 295 in 72 games, which is outstanding, 10 homers, 1 steal. Seems great. People love him. I've seen an awesome post for it. I'm still hesitant. But what do you have, Toby? What are your thoughts on Vinny P? I think he's very, very good. I guess I just wish the price tag wasn't this price.
Yeah. Yeah, the price is pretty high. Price is pretty high. He's a very good player. I mean, I think the argument is obviously the batting average is going to be elite. The guy doesn't strike out. He makes a high quality of contact. You could easily argue, you know, the 298 plate appearance sample is a nice one. You could easily argue, you know, that he underperformed in home runs, you know, 20 barrels, only 10 home runs. So about 50% barrel per home run. So you could add a couple on there and you wouldn't be in trouble. Multiply that by two, you know, you're looking at a 295 average with 24, 25 home runs. I think the challenge is maybe, you know, and I think this is, I think the challenge maybe a little bit is the power, the place he plays, the lineup he's going to be in. Mm-hmm. I think that takes away from it. And you can see it a little bit with the runs and RBI, you know, that he had last year, where he certainly got very unlucky. I should actually look at this. Let's see his stats and where did this guy?
Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Okay, Vinny P. Yeah, this is ridiculous. 8.4% runs per plate appearance and an 8.7% RBI per plate appearance. You know, the runs per plate appearance is ridiculous given, you know, how consistently he's getting on base with a 12% walk rate and a .295 batting average. You know, just to give you a sense of where that ranks. So Vinny P last year, now this is players that, you know, granted, this is only first baseman that had 50 or more plate appearances last year, but he ranked 59 out of 79 first basemen in runs per plate appearance. Wow. Despite having a totally great OBP. And then in RBI, he was also towards the bottom, which is just, I mean, way down there. Yeah. Again, he was 60th out of, so he was very unlucky last year. So I don't think that's going to happen again, but I do worry a little bit just because the talent is so shallow and that ballpark really does have an impact. I think we see that, you know, we saw that, we've seen that with so many guys. And so that's just something that I think we need to factor in. And so I think I don't hate it because I think it's a very solid profile. I don't think it's going to go awry too much, but I do think that the ceiling is capped out just a little bit. Yep. Because of the environment that he plays in.
And I guess it makes sense. The guy that's going right after him, I see a lot of similarities between him and Nathaniel Lowe. I could see mm-hmm. the, you know, low 20-ish to maybe mid 20 power. And Vinny P might tap into more. Listen to some prospect guys. They say it's like legit. That's why they call him Italian breakfast. Or like there's a lot there that maybe he still hasn't unleashed yet. So maybe it's also get on the train now and hope it happens. But I think you a lot of that stuff you talked about just being in Kansas City, Kauffman Stadium, that's rough. It is funny because we talk about their offense because it was a bad offense. But then we have Vinny, Salvi, Melendez, Bobby Witt, all going in the top 90 picks, which is pretty crazy to think about. We have four of their nine hitters going that high. So, yeah, he's a tough one. Like, looking at his profile, like I see a lot of Nathaniel Lowe, who we're going to talk about next. I guess another way you could say it's maybe it's a poor man's, like, Freddie Freeman, that if you ever hit a ceiling to get closer to that, just because the batting average he brings compared to others at first base. I don't think he'll ever steal like Freddie. I don't know the power I could see maybe both hitting 30. It's just a tough one for me because it's a lot of what ifs I could see where I could go and draft someone else. And I'm a safe drafter. That's my problem. So this is just one of those that if I get it wrong with Vinny P, I want to root for him. I've talked about it on shows that I love his Twitter presence. He's absolutely amazing. He's awesome. He took pictures in Italy by a sign that said Italian breakfast and took a picture of it. He's all, now I know what it is too, guys, and took a picture and posted it. He posted a picture on the freeway driving by Kauffman Stadium the other day and said, sorry, next time I'll Photoshop out the trash because there's trash all over the freeway. Like, he's just a funny young kid enjoying life. Well, I don't root for him. He's playing on my fantasy team, unfortunately.
And I think one thing about that Royals lineup is that's a good fantasy lineup, but for like then the real baseball lineup, you know, it's like Melendez, you're like, oh, I'm only drafting him because he can play catcher. Right. Yep. And then it's like Bobby Witt. It's like, ah, Bobby Witt's like power speed combo, but he doesn't have a great OBP. He's not necessarily like a great hitter in actuality. Even Salvi P, I mean, great hitter, great guy, wonderful. Yep. Also OBP of like 300, you know, a lot of OBPs of like 300 in that lineup. And so I think that makes generating those counting stats a little challenging.
100%. Seventh first baseman on the board. I talked about him a second ago, Nathaniel Lowe, going to pick 94.38, as high as 86. Finally put it together, 27 homers, 302 average, only a couple of steals, but second full season in Texas. He played 157 games in each season. I love the consistent playing time. I believe he's at least a low to mid 20 power guy, and I think he's going to hit for – he's not hitting for 302, but I think he's a pretty darn solid ball player. We know what we're going to get with Nathaniel Lowe. To me, that's what I feel like. I know what we're going to get with him, where Vinny has a lot of question marks still. So it's like if you miss out on the big five or whatever, and you're trying to get one of these guys before the cliff starts to fall off, Nathaniel Lowe, I feel like we've got a really good idea of what we're getting and compared to Vinny P. So what do you got on Nathaniel Lowe?
Yeah, Lowe is definitely very interesting. I like him a lot. I don't know if I like him here.
Wasn't he like a 200-something ADP last year?
Yeah, he was like...
He was like the second pocket that we talked about.
Mid-200s, yeah. I had him on a few teams. I mean, there are things that I really like. Like, he's consistently had a very high BABIP throughout his career. So while 363 is high and it's going to drop, you know, it's not necessarily outrageous. You know, he had the 27 home runs on 44 barrels, which is a very reasonable around league average rate. You know, he dropped his ground ball rate, you know, over the course of the full season, although it shot up towards the end, right? So just kind of the ebb and flow of Nathaniel Lowe. So I just think it's poetry. This podcast
second show back, and he's already picked up where he left off, guys. So just took a little, knocked the rust off. Here he is.
Holy cow. So I do like him, and I think the Rangers have done a lot. Like, I think you got to believe in their pitching, in their hitting staff, and what they're able to do with hitters, just based on the growth that we saw last year from, you know, a few players. I'm just not sure if this is where I'm grabbing a low profile. I'm not sure if there's anything that's like
it great. Doesn't jump off the page.
The batting average is going to be really good, I think. I'm not quite sure anything else will be that good for me to take him in the top 100, yeah. I think.
Yeah, because there's, and I know I keep hinting, but there's two guys coming up that I'd rather have if I don't get one of the top four. Let's just put it that way. And that's what makes it tough. I do like Nathaniel Lowe a lot, but you also hit on it. We were getting him at post 200 last year, which is pretty nice. This is a little different story at this point in time, but the offense is better. Still a bad ballpark, but Seager and Semien, and maybe they'll make another move. They're spending money in Texas. They're doing something. So maybe they bring another guy. Who knows? That'll keep things a little spicy. The eighth first baseman off the board, and this is a guy that got a bunch of helium last year and more this year, CJ Cron, pick 123.38. This one's interesting, Toby. 257 average is kind of what we expect from CJ. 29 homers, kind of what we expect from CJ. Problem is, like, the line looks decent, kind of what you expect from CJ, but I know you know the answer to this. Those home road splits are devastating with CJ Cron. And if we just care about the end stats, that's fine. But if you want to play the game and, you know, try to sit him and start him and stuff, it could be a pain in the butt. So what do you like about CJ Cron?
Yeah, I just don't love it. I think last year was the first year he's had 600 plate appearances. In his age, you know, he's going to be 33 when the season starts. Yep. He's a likely trade candidate, given that his contract is ending at the end of the, you know, he becomes a free agent at the end of the year. There's just nothing that he does that's special. Even last year, fantastic year, great year for him. I don't think he repeats that. And just like health-wise and everything-wise. So, I just don't I don't want to be drafting that profile there.
I'm with you. It's tough. It's very tough. And for CJ Cron fans, but that's what we kind of hinted at the beginning of the show is so many of the guys that moved into the top 10 that we liked last year, we're not going to like them this year because they moved into the top 10. They went, the ADPs just changed the entire game for what we're getting because their profile didn't change. That's the problem. They didn't like, they didn't make a change that goes, yes, they are a 35 home run guy. No, they didn't. That's the problem right there. Where like, at least with like Goldie last year, you could be like, okay, well, that was like, okay, we got something here. That wasn't the case. All right. The man that I can talk about on any show at any time, Reese Hoskins, ninth first baseman off the board. That's moved up a bit. Pick 123, as high as 113. And this is why I don't understand why I would take some other guys without waiting. 246, 30 home runs. The runs and RBIs are the, some of the better ones in his career. Less to be desired, I could say. You'd hope for more there. But the power, the average is what you're going to get from CJ. He's at 246, 247, 245, 226, 246. Like, you know what you're getting from CJ Cron. I mean, some Reese Hoskins. But the power is legit. I've argued this on Blue in the Face every offseason. When I talk about Reese Hoskins, people say he can't do it. And the other thing before I give it to Toby, everyone said it was injuries. He played 156 games last year. He was injured in 2021, but it was 160 and 153 prior to that. So the injury-prone thing I don't agree with either. So I'm biased because I like the guy, but I will take his value almost every draft season at this position.
Yeah.
Toby's going to tell me I'm wrong because the runs and RBIs do stink. I'll tell you that much. And I would expect more in that lineup, but somehow it doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, it's still pretty solid. I mean, yeah, I think he's...
Give it to me, Toby. Don't be shy. Give it to me. I can see it on your
face. No, I mean, I think it's kind of what you said. I mean, and one of the things I think that's really important, especially for somebody who has drafted like I have in the past, is being able to adjust to the new environment that we have, right? Like if we're putting a lot more onus on the 2022 ball and the fact that we think that that might happen again, then you have to bump up the power potential. I think there's something to be said for his consistency when healthy, both in terms of batting average, which is not the best, but is in the 240s. You know, the home run, the power is in, you know, you can't really argue with that. Harper's going to be out, so that's a little bit of a hit maybe, but then you're adding Trey Turner in,
yep.
You know, so it's still a really good lineup. Everything is solid there. So I struggle a little bit, like, you know, what was his OBP? You know, his OBP is higher than league average, but he's not getting runs necessarily. I think, yeah, I mean, I'm interested to plug in that projection, especially with like maybe a slightly higher batting average, because I think that's kind of who he is as a player. So I think he's fine here. I think he's fine here. Actually, the reason why for all these guys, you know, I just wouldn't even touch him is the next guy we talk about.
Yeah, I have zero problem. Like the fact he's the 10th off the board is pretty amazing. And it goes back to your, I want to get a bounce back guy. Here's your guy. One last thing on Reese Hoskins, which is going to be interesting because right now in roster resource, obviously Bryce Harper out for probably the first half of the season. Turner, Schwarber, they have Hoskins third with JTR. And then Castellanos and company behind him. But we know JTR can drive guys in, so that should help with the runs. Turner should get on base a lot. Just depends if Schwarber drive them all in. Because I'd love to go back and look at the lineups day in and day out. Like, Schwarber hit almost 50 home runs. Harper did his. Like, where did Hoskins is he in the middle? Is kind of, you know, solo home riding it to death, trying to figure it out. So that, because there's too much talent in that lineup to have the runs and RBIs. Yes, that's very interesting to me. All right, 10th first baseman off the board, and this is a amazing value on paper, and I would be, anything could happen, I'd be surprised if this feels like Jose Altuve last year, Toby, when we talked about values at positions because he had a quote unquote down 2020 or 2021. Well, same team now because Jose Abreu is a Houston Astro. He's going to pick 127 right now, which is pretty funny to me, and it's because he only hit 15 home runs, Toby. Only 15 home runs last year, still hit 304. Still had 85 runs and 75 RBIs, but only 15 home runs, Toby. He can't home runs anymore, apparently. So no one wants to draft him. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I love Abreu a lot, going where he's going. I mean, you mentioned he hit 304. You know, probably he had a 350 BABIP, so I don't think that's going to be sustainable. But the number that jumps out to me the most is he had 15 home runs on 47 barrels,
yep, bingo,
which was a 31.9% home run per barrel rate. You know, so the barrel rate was solid. It was actually like pretty similar to 2021, like Freddie Freeman's and CJ Crone's and, you know, a lot of the guys who hit for, although Freeman didn't hit for a ton of power, but it's not like an elite number, but it's good. It's good enough. And so, you know, even if you give him, 50% of those, right, he's hitting in the mid 20s all of a sudden. You know, so I see no reason why he can't hit like 280 with 30 bombs and then a ton of counting stats in that lineup as well. So I really like him a lot, and I find it hard to draft really any of those, you know, any of the Olsen. I mean, even the Goldie through Hoskins because of Abreu.
Abreu used to be that guy that went around Goldie every year, and he somehow dropped this far because of that one season.
Yeah.
That was the funny one.
That's yeah. This reminds me of his season, however long ago it was.
It was after 2018.
Yeah. He had like a really bad batting average, right? Yeah,
he hit 265, yeah, and only played 128 games because he's played 152 or more in six of the last seven seasons, and he played all 60 in 2020. The dude plays games. And that was the one season where he got hurt for a little bit. So he dropped. It's like, unless he's broken, which I don't think he is going to be 36. So you got that conversation going. But I think a lot of that's baked into the price. I think it's baked in too much. Like, at worst, he hits 20 to 25 home runs and hits 285-ish plus and probably drives in 100 in that lineup, unless Jordan drives them all in. That's at worst. Like, you wouldn't be shocked if he hits 300 again. You wouldn't be shocked if he hits 30 plus homers with the Crawford boxes and right or left. Like, a lot of this wouldn't shock you at all when you see it. So I'm with you, 100% with you on this one. And I would imagine when we re-talk about first base in February, I think he's closer to Vinny P. That I think he'll probably get a 2 to 3 round jump in ADP.
Yeah,
I don't think he jumps the Vinny P to Matt Olson because that's like from 90 to like 45. But I think he's closer to Vinny P, right, by the time we do this again. I think people will start to look into the numbers, like just even the little few that you mentioned. Keep digging deeper. Second best hard hit rate of his entire career was last year. Like, so many little things. And I just love the one you talked about. We talk about a lot throughout the years. Barrels per home run, or that percentage deal, or home runs per barrel, and how far off he is from the league average. That speaks volumes to what took place there. So 100% with you on that.
Yeah, I mean, one thing about Abreu, I'm just looking at it, you know, his pulled fly ball rate has dropped the last 2 years.
That was a big one.
But the home run per fly ball on those pulled fly balls has dropped considerably as well. By like 28.6% last year, his pulled fly ball home run rate was 28.6% last year compared to 68%, 60%, 60%, you know, the previous years. So I think there is a reason why that power maybe is diminishing a little bit with that, the new ball with more oppo fly balls that he's hitting, but I don't think it at all accounts for the level of drop that we've seen in his power. And yeah, I think that's why you saw how excited the Astros were.
Oh, yeah.
Very smart organization.
That's what I was saying. First, like, Freddie Freeman had the same thing last year in LA, a lot of opposite field fly balls. So that was one thing that he had to adjust from. But when it comes to Abreu, who I think we can all agree is a very good professional hitter, just a great hitter in general. Now he's going to go to that clubhouse with Bregman with all the pulled home runs, Altuve with all the pulled home runs, the coaching staff that taught those guys how to do that. Pretty sure Abreu in one offseason can talk to those guys for a little bit and figure out how to pull the ball just a bit more, just a bit. I'm not saying it's got to reinvent the wheel, but he seems like that kind of hitter where he can figure something like that out. Just a hunch to me. Could be wrong. Maybe I am. Maybe I'm overthinking it. But at that price tag, I'm with you. I'd be willing to find out. I'd be willing to guess he's going to hit 25-plus home runs next year. Just going to throw that out there. But maybe he goes the way of Joey Votto. We'll see. Poor Joey. See where it goes there. All right. Now it gets real fun. As Toby said earlier, 11 through 20. This is good. It's ADP 136 to 189. Christian Walker, Andrew Vaughn, Jose Miranda, Anthony Rizzo, Ryan Mountcastle, Ty France, Rowdy Tellez, Brandon Drury, Joey Meneses, Jake Cronenworth. You want to talk about hitting a cliff and falling fast? We have done this, Toby. So I'll let you have the floor first, I guess. What's one of, we usually do two each. We might share one here and we'll see, but what do you like here at the 11th or 20?
Yeah, nothing. I would pass on this whole group, honestly. But if I had to take I will preface this by saying I think they're a little bit interesting. You know, Anthony Rizzo is interesting to me. Clearly he's got the power. You know, he's playing in Yankee Stadium, which helps, I think, because he pulls fly balls well, or benefits from that short porch, at least. His major downfall in recent years has been, you know, the huge decline in both the is in his batting average, which is largely BABIP driven. You know, 218 BABIP, 216 BABIP, 258 BABIP. And you know, I think it's too much to say that he's going to be one of the guys that benefits the most. You know, I think it's hard to say, and it's hard to know how
your mic rules. Just cut out. Oh, there you go. You're good. No, you're good now.
And bend the rules when it comes to the shift, but he seems like a clear guy that could benefit from that, from a BABIP perspective. He hits the ball in the air a ton, so I don't know whether he'll adjust that approach now with, you know, given that, but last year was a little bit extreme. I mean, it was essentially 10% higher than the previous year and any year before that, his fly ball rate. So I think that will also help his batting average just a little bit. Health is obviously a concern, but I think, you know, with everything said and done, you could easily see him putting up a similar season to, you know, no offense, a Rhys Hoskins or a CJ Cron, but going a decent amount later. Again, I'm not convinced of that. Like, I still wouldn't draft him, but I think it's at least interesting to kind of think about how he might be impacted by some of the rule changes. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and the short porch and right, I love, like, he's a guy I didn't want anything to do with last year, and the batting average kind of made me feel better about it, but the power is legit, and I don't think it's going to change next year because he's going to be in the same ballpark, same situation, and the batting average might improve to go with the power, like you said. I don't hate it. With the ugliness at first base we talked about, I don't see how he's going this far back compared to some other guys ahead of him. It's like, I'm with you on that as well. If you have a good batting average base going into your draft, I honestly don't have a problem if you've missed on first base taking a guy like Rizzo. At least we've seen the pedigree with him, where we've seen him hit for average before, and he's still not old. He's still pretty young. So you've at least seen it there, where like you have like the Joey Meneses and these guys. And it's like, are we really buying this again? Like, really? Like, so I'd rather take my shots on an Anthony Rizzo than have to get stuck with one of these other guys. And like, he's grown on me already the first couple of months of my research here, where I'm like, okay, last year I crossed him off. This year it's like, okay, if the draft falls the wrong way, I can live with that one at least. I can go with that, because at worst, my problem is always power. I think it gets me 30-plus home runs in that ballpark, which should RBIs and runs will come with that. So I can see an argument for Rizzo. Like you said, I'd rather not get stuck with Rizzo, but I can see the argument for Rizzo at that point in the draft. All right, for me, this is where it gets fun, because I'm just purely speculating here, but I'm going to go to Andrew Vaughn. He's going at 141. I've been a big Vaughn guy. If you guys listen to my DFS content, I'm always on Vaughn. He's always cheap. It's just a matter of Uncle Tony playing him or not, and the inconsistency of how he played him. When he played regularly, he hit the ball well. He didn't, of course. And there's still some like things that are of concern, but for me, it's his age. He was one of the best pure hitters in all college baseball before he got drafted. He's going to be 25 this year. 17 home runs last year, hit 271. I think the average is legit. He's proven that every step of the way that he hit for average. I think the power is to come, because he lowered his batting average, which was great to see. Had the 17 home runs, but you know, the barrel rate went down. Hard hit rate was better though. And the biggest thing to me is the ground ball rate went up. And the fly ball rate obviously dropped with that. And similar to players mentioned before, he has the opposite field home run issue or fly ball issue. He has a big one of those. But again, young player with a very good hitting mindset. The fact he's young, I think he can kind of adapt. Maybe it's not this year, but I think we're going to see like people realize, especially with the new regime coaching in Chicago, they might start actually looking into some of this stuff, hopefully. I think the talent is legit as legit can be. Now, does he do it this year? I don't know. But he's a guy, again, if you miss out on the top guys, I have no problem taking Andrew Vaughn as a speculation of maybe a guy taking the next step to getting you the 20 to 25 home runs. He legit could be a better Rhys Hoskins, and it wouldn't shock me because he will hit for average. I'm pretty confident in that. Just will the power come with it? So that's my thoughts on Andrew Vaughn. What else you got?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to take any guys in this range, honestly. And you pick the one guy that is of interest to me as well. Like, I would take him over Rizzo for sure, the guy you're going to talk about next. So yeah. I won't talk about him. I mean, I do think that Ty France is
interesting.
Kind of interesting. Yeah. You know, pick 165. I think he's established himself as a good hitter. I don't think he's excellent at anything, but I think he's good at a lot of things. So I can easily see, let me just see what his projection here looks like. I should have been more prepared to have it right in front of me. There it is.
No worries.
There it is. So his projection is 23 home runs, 87 runs, 80 RBI, one steal and 272 batting average. So I think plus across the board, and in today's landscape where home runs are worth a little bit more, you know, the 23 isn't soul crushing at all. Right. You know, that's really solid. So I think Ty France is interesting because I think he's a good hitter and I think he does everything well, except for steal, of course, but you know, most first basemen don't.
Exactly. Most don't. That's what makes those big guys up top so much more valuable. My guy that you said you liked also, so you can throw in some insights if you want at the end here, is Ryan Mountcastle. And honestly, again, maybe I'm naive of the situation. When we look at this list of guys here, how he's 15th on this list is pretty surprising to me. Like, we saw him hit 250 last year, which is pretty much who he is, 250 to 250, 255 the year before. Projections, 255. It's kind of who he is. 22 home runs. We know they messed with him at the ballparks. He had 33 the year before. Elite power. Plays 144, 145 games. Strikes out a bit. Like, his numbers are almost identical across the board. Lower ISO, but a lot of that's that new freaking left field in that ballpark. Projections still have him for 26 home runs, which will be good. But, you know, max EV was fine. Barrel rate, 15%, the best of his career. Hard hit rate, 45.8, best of his career. If you believe in X stats, he technically underachieved. Ground ball rate still a little high, but not too bad. The fly ball rate's great. A home run to fly ball, that could be improved again. Left field at Orioles Park, screwed him up there. And that's not going to change, obviously. So I keep saying it, and that is going to be a problem. At the same time, this dude power is legit. And if he can somehow just tweak it a little bit more, like, he could easily be back in that 30 home run range, and he's going to hit for 250 plus average. Very good ball player. Again, I know I have my love for Rhys's pieces, and like I'm kind of blind. Ryan Mountcastle is 100% fine compared to Rhys Hoskins. I will not argue that one at all. So yeah, I like Rhys. I mean, Mountcastle, he's on my brain. So what do you got on Mountcastle that you liked so much?
Yeah, you know, I would say that I would draft Ryan Mountcastle. I actually like him. And I blame you for stealing him from me to talk about. But, you know, this is actually super interesting. His O swing dropped dramatically as the season progressed, because we know that he's like one of the league's worst in O swing, or he has been throughout his career, over 40%. But he dropped it over his last 40 games to 34.3%. And it wasn't like, I mean, starting with game, you know, starting on July 31st, you know, midway through the season, it was all downhill from there when it came to his O swing. Hard hit rate also shot up at the same time. You know, the contact rate stayed the same, which is about, you know, league average across the board. And then I think one of the things that really stands out for me, and you mentioned the impact that the moving the stadium fences back had on him, which is certainly something we need to account for. But last year he had 61 barrels, which is the same number of barrels. It's tied for the most barrels of any first baseman with Matt Olson. It's actually more barrels than Vlad Jr. and Pete Alonso. had at 61 for Mountcastle. The problem was only 36.1% of those barrels went for home runs, which again puts him between Abreu and Freddie Freeman at for the lowest home run per barrel rates. And so I think Mountcastle's really solid here. I like him a lot.
Outstanding. 100% with you on that one. So, and let me triple check. No, he's only first base only this time around, but yeah, he is one that you could target for sure. All right, past 20 ADP, it's pick 194 and beyond, Toby. We each have two guys again. There's a couple that are okay. Most of it's still pretty ugly. Like one I'm going to talk about, I'm not like in love with, but I can see the appeal. So what's your first one post ADP 20?
Miguel Vargas, the Dodgers, is very interesting. I mean, I think you need to, I'll caveat this by saying that Steamer, as I mentioned last time, generally is higher on prospects than other systems are. So I think it will take, you know, when the Bad X comes out and ATC comes out and other projection systems kind of come out, I think I'll have a better sense of where I actually rate him. But, you know, right now Steamer has him at 504 plate appearances, which if he comes in and he hits, I think is a little low. You know, I think they've talked about giving him that third base job. Justin Turner could always come back, but he's likely to have that first base, third base eligibility. And then I think 18 home runs, 63 runs, 65 RBI, 8 steals with a 264 average for Vargas. He qualifies in first base. I was like, does he qualify for first base? He does qualify for first base. So I think he can do pretty much everything. And so if you say that 504 plate appearances, and then you say, well, let's just give him 600 plate appearances, you know, that's it's a very Ty France line with a little bit of speed. With, I think, a little bit of potential to be more. So I think it's a high ceiling, maybe lowish floor pick, mm-hmm. but I think Vargas is really interesting.
I'm with you on the interesting part for sure. It's just, will they play him enough? They should. Right now they have to. I'm with you 100%. That could be a good one, a good lineup too, even with the loss of Trey. Still a very, very good team to back behind. For me, it's a guy I just can't quit. Josh Naylor, ADP of 218. People are like, oh, they got Josh Bell. That doesn't matter. Everything I've read already, and I trust me, when it first happened I was angry because I love the value on Josh Naylor, and I know he doesn't hit lefties well, so he platoons a lot, but he still plays about 100 and played 122 games last year. He's projected for 130. Everything, even Terry Francona said, he said the first thing he's going to do is call Josh to see if he's cool with first base DH and maybe play more outfield because they want Josh's bat in the lineup. That's all I care about for fantasy. I don't care where he plays, just be in the lineup. So at this point of ADP, I'm a fan because if I can get a guy that's going to hit for an okay average, again, in this era, 256 last year, 253, 247, 249, he's essentially a 250-ish hitter, which in this era, totally fine. Especially at his ADP, 20 home runs last year, 6 stolen bases, finally healthy for his standards. And the funny thing is he played 122 games. I think if you remember, Toby, he missed like the first month or two because he had an injury going into the season. So in theory, even with platooning, if he plays the full season, maybe he's more 140. Now we're really sitting pretty. So, like, that's totally fine, again, in this era of baseball. So you give me a 20-plus, 25 home run guy, whatever, decent average, handful of stolen bases. He doesn't strike out much at all. He increases walk rate. He has barrel one-ups, our hit rate up. Everything was a boon when it came to Josh Naylor. I think we're still just touching the tip of the ice with him because he really hasn't got fair run until now. He's going to be 26, still super young. I'm a big Josh Naylor fan. I think he could be like the Nathaniel Lowe of this year, potentially, if the playing time's there, when it comes to just taking that kind of next step, at least in fantasy terms, where people realize who he really is. So, yeah, I'm a fan of Josh Naylor, obviously.
That's funny. I thought this whole time you were talking about Josh Bell, who's my guy that I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, and they're very similar. That's the funny part. When they signed him, I literally was like, where's the Spider-Man meme? Like, they're so similar. But, yeah, give me some Josh Bell. This is just your guy.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that there's a lot there's a lot to like in Josh Bell. I mean, like you said, I think, you know, I think he, and from what I've seen in the media and them talking, the plan is to play both of them, you know, rotating in a DH, outfield, like you mentioned, potentially for Naylor. Josh Bell, I just think he's like all around, he's still really solid. You know, the batting average has been plus every year except for one. You know, last year he hit 266, right around the same BABIP. He cut his strikeout rate, like you mentioned, increased his walk rate as well. You know, the ground ball rate is never going to be, you know, anything to write home about. It's very Vlad Jr.-esque. But, you know, he still had 33 barrels, only hit the 17 home runs. You know, so a little bit lucky, unlucky there. If you look at his pulled fly ball, home run per fly ball, it was down last year by 50% over the previous year. So I think that changes a little bit. He's going to the Guardians Stadium, which is one of the better left-handed parks in all of baseball. I think he's going to hit in the middle of that lineup. So I think there's no reason to believe he can't hit 260 plus. With more than 20 home runs, very solid run in RBI, you know, and you're getting him, you know, what, around pick 200? Is that where we're at right now with Josh Bell? Yeah, right around pick 200.
He's like a round before Naylor, so you can almost just get them both if you wanted to lock up for. I'm not saying that's the strategy, but they're very solid players for at that point in the draft.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one theme that you highlighted earlier that I think is important is you have a bunch of guys that were going, you know, in that middle range who leapt up because of the seasons they had last year. And you got to just trying to figure out what is the true talent level there.
Yep.
And then adjusting accordingly. And I think was Josh Bell at about his true talent level? Maybe last year
he was in that Cron and Hoskins range last year, that bubble. And guys went up and he came down. And was Bell really that bad? I know that's what you're trying to say. I probably should just let you keep going. But
No. I mean, that's exactly it, right? Is like all these guys who last year were going around the same spot, you know, because we thought they were pretty similar players. For the guy that was still pretty good, but just not necessarily the power numbers maybe weren't what we wanted them to be.
And let's look at Josh Bell farther, like just from nothing that you'll see on Fangraphs. The dude played on a bad team in Washington, got traded midseason. Then he was like in San Diego where there's a lot of good players, but you could tell he was not the same hitter for a while. Like he looks lost at the plate. Now he's going to start a season in Cleveland. They call home, signed a contract. He's going to be there for a bit. I'm just saying, like, we don't talk about it enough, in my opinion, the mental aspect of the game, because I play baseball a lot, not to this extent, obviously, not major league level, but there's, you know, when you come in just to the stadium and your personal life ain't right, that will 100% affect your play at the plate. I'm not saying his personal life wasn't right, but you try moving around and trying to do different things, you're living out of hotel rooms and you're doing this and that and the other, and you can tell he wasn't comfortable for at least a month, and that's big.
Yeah, and also San Diego is one of the worst left-handed hitting ballparks in all of baseball, and the National Stadium is one of the best. Yeah,
and so is Cleveland. Because I remember, I'll never forget it. Because I remember when Eddie, you know, the Eagle, went to Cleveland. I wrote an article 3 years ago or whatever, and I looked at those park factors. It stood out like a sore thumb. It is very good for left-handed hitters. Very good.
Oh man, when do we get to talk about Eddie Rosario? When is that?
I don't know. Do we do outfield preview part five, or how's that one come about? All right, so my last one will be quick, because I think we kind of Josh Bell and Josh Naylor are probably the two favorites in this range. Let's go deep. Vargas is interesting though. I'm 100% with you on that one. I kind of went with a young guy. If you want to look in the potential and look for a potential bounce back, or if you want to, you know, throw a dart late in the draft, he's ADP 274. He can be a quick drop for you if you want, but he's a guy that I know the talent's much better than we've seen on the field so far, and that's Spencer Torkelson. Again, this time last year, much higher ADP. This was a former first overall pick. People thought he'd be great, broke camp with the team, and he stunk. That's the nice way of putting it. It was not good. He hit 203 on the season, 8 home runs, but only a 24.5% K rate, which to me when you hit that bad, that kind of stands out a little bit for me. Like, okay, he's still kind of making contact. Okay, let's look at that contact real quick. His O swing was only 27.7, which is interesting. His overall contact was 77%. Like, these aren't horrible. They're not great. But, like, the fact he's not chasing balls a ton kind of stands out a little bit to me. Like, he's still in the zone. Just the overall contact quality is not ideal. So then I wanted to look at his game logs. And one thing that stood out to me, the batting average still stinks. But, you know, he got sent down for a while, came back up on September 2nd, hit 3 of his 8 home runs in that final month. Again, it is what it is. But that's a, you know, you take almost half your home runs in 1 month. It's big. K rate was only 21.7 compared to 24.5 on the season. Hit 219, not ideal. Still much better than the season's 203. Like, there's little improvements you see when you look at Torkelson, and I'm really grasping at straws. That's where we are in the draft. His O swing was slightly higher, but his overall contact rates were all the same. His actually O contact was better in the second his second run. So to me, it's just, again, looking at a kid basically, because he's a kid. He was in Arizona 2 years ago. He's going to be 23 years old this year. And projectors have him hitting 233, Steamer with 18 home runs. He's better than a 233 guy. Can he make the jump this year? I don't know. The ballpark sucks. We know that. The
ballpark sucks.
Yeah, that's and he's an opposite field guy too. And so that really sucks for him. So I get it. If you don't want this guy, I don't know if I'll have him. I'm just looking at guys this late in the draft that the talent level is much better than what we're seeing on the field right now. Does he make the jump enough? I don't know. If he was ever in Great American Small Park, I'd be 100 to 100 leagues with this guy probably. But that ballpark alone should probably tell you, Bubba, you're an idiot. Stop talking. It's just, I know the talent's better. And that's a guy that one of these years, might not be this next year, but you also probably won't get this ADP next year. He's going to take a big jump. So if you want to take a gamble of a guy that, hey, put him on your bench for the first couple of weeks and be one of your first drops, cool. Maybe he strikes gold. Because all it takes is a hot spring training, and then, you know, people go, he hits great and forget he goes to Comerica after that. But, yeah, I just want to mention Spencer Torkelson. I think he's much better than this ADP says. I get why he's there, because it was horrific last year. But he's a much better ball player than this, and he's only 23, and I think much better days are to come. That's my two cents.
Yeah, just to highlight one of the things you mentioned, I mean, that Detroit Park with the new ball is just so a godforsaken place. If you look at the laggards, not the leaders, of home runs per barrel across baseball, it's riddled with Tigers. Riley Green, Torkelson, all these guys. And I don't know what exactly to do with it about it, except for not draft guys. I mean, Torkelson, like you mentioned, like, he's going so deep in drafts and has such pedigree that it's a little bit of a different proposition. But man, it's absolutely brutal, like you mentioned.
It's not pleasant at all. All right, got a couple of listener questions before we head on out of here on a Monday night. Our buddy Ben Tidd, BreakingBen_T on the Twitter there. I know it may be a little premature for this question, but based on the lack of depth at other positions, how early would you be comfortable drafting a first baseman? Do you think taking one inside the top 100 would put you in a hole in terms of roster construction and possibly steals? Now, this is a fun question because I just did a Gladiator draft with Ben, and he's doing research for other drafts as well. And the Gladiator, for what it's really good for, it's obviously different ADP because you have the way you fill your roster out, but it also shows you quickly what positions suck. Like, third base is a mess and other positions. But, Toby, it kind of goes to our question here. We talked about, like, the top four or five guys. There's, you know, a handful in the top 100, but it gets bad quick. And I think to explain Ben's question more to the listeners, it's like, you know, you're going to want to get a couple pitchers early, relievers, starters, whatever you want to do in general. Some might want to get a catcher early. You know, outfield, you have five outfielders. You probably want to get at least one early in the top 100. Like, there's certain ways to construct your roster you're going to want to do. So what Ben's asking, Toby, as you understood, is, do you feel comfortable taking a top 100 pick on a first baseman and maybe hurting another position? Are you comfortable waiting on first base? Is essentially what Ben's asking here.
I think I'm cool waiting on first base if I need to. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's all relative, you know. It's like, I feel all right grabbing Josh Bell at pick 200. I mean, there's even guys that are further down here. Like,
yeah,
God, if Garrett Cooper could actually find a place
I just drafted him in round 41 of my NFBC 50. That's my third first baseman. I'm 100% with you.
I mean, honestly, Yeah, I just
Trey
think
Mancini. Let's see where he signs. Maybe Cincinnati. Signs.
Yeah, Trey Mancini's fine. I mean, I don't know why a team wouldn't want him. Matt Mervis taking a little bit of a shot on him to see what he can potentially do.
Are we all out on Joey Votto at pick 374?
I mean, why not be back in on
at that ADP? I'm honest. At that ADP, yeah. Why not? And he's still in the same ballpark, folks.
Why not? I mean, DJ LeMahieu, I know there's like injury concerns, so we got to be mindful of that. But what about Tristan Casas? I mean, he looked fantastic. Yep. I mean, the results weren't there, but he looked prepared to face major league hitting. So
where's Brandon Belt get signed? I know he gets hurt a lot, but ADP 480, if he gets in a good ballpark, like what do you have to lose?
Yeah. And I mean, it's like, I think it's just generally like one of those questions and, you know, Ben's a great player, so he knows this too, yep. But it's like, you know, it's all relative to one another. It's like, if you didn't draft one of those top first basemen, like you're getting something else. If you do draft one of those top first basemen, all right, you've got the edge in first base over other folks, but you don't have this other thing. Or you have to draft some positions later on. And honestly, looking at first base, you know, I feel decent about like the options that are out there and that are available. I don't mind it as a position. And even as we got into like the middle rounds, I mean, the Mountcastle, France, you know, those guys, I don't mind that at all.
I think it just goes back to also it's a couple things real quick. Doing drafts early, or the biggest thing is this is how you use ADP. People like get mad about using ADP. Look at it like you just said there. If I do take a first baseman early, what do I miss out on? Okay, I didn't take a shortstop per se. Am I good with a shortstop post 150 now instead of a first baseman? Or like so on, like that's what Toby's basically saying. So use the ADP in that respect. Like, you know, as you chart out your just for fun, just chart out your draft. How do you think it would go? And are you good with that change? And that's kind of where he's at there. The second thing, I just totally brain farted on that, my second one, but I'll figure it out later.
Well, yeah, like you mentioned, work that draft backwards, you know? Yeah. Like, what are you going to take later on?
Some very, very smart people, like Jenny Butler, comes out with an article every year. She's talked about it on shows. She legit has, like, a flow chart. Like, if A, go to B, if not, go to C. Like, she has a whole thing, and it's, like, it's pretty darn genius, personally. So, a lot smarter people than I, let's put it that way. All right. Next listener question here. Thank you, Ben. You don't want that. Steve Powell, we got you, buddy. He said, just need an extended discussion on Vinny P. I think we got that one in the bags already. Yes, we
apologies.
We really, really like Vinny P. We don't like Vinny P's ADP. I guess the nicest way to say it. I hope he succeeds. And I hope I'm wrong. Let's put it that way. But Toby, let me double check Twitter real quick. That might be it. That is it. Two questions this week. It's the off season. I won't get mad. It's the off season. You guys, we expect more, but I'm just saying it's the off season. I get it. Final thoughts though is first base. It's like, it's almost as if either take one early or wait till like close 200. Oh, that's what I was going to ask you though. Okay. So and this comes back to maybe working your draft backwards or planning your draft, as you said. Now, knowing you're not going to take a guy early, do you plan on saying, hey, Mountcastle's around 15 pick, I'm taking him in around 13 going into that draft? Like, I want to leave with Mountcastle? Or are you just going with your draft and going, okay, I missed on Mountcastle, now I'm going to wait for Josh Bell? Like,
yeah, I mean, I think
because you're going to have to push him up to make sure you get him.
I need to know more before I make that level of decision.
But in theory, like, once you're fully prepped, is that kind of how you would push type thing? Like,
I think at that level of the draft, when you're in, you know, whatever it is, I never know the round numbers, but when you're in like the difference between 150 pick 150 and 180 or, you know, 130 versus 150 is fairly minimal just from like a dollar perspective in terms of what they're worth, maybe like a dollar or two. So maybe like a couple home run difference. So I think if I liked him enough, then I would be all over that, but I got to, you know, I'm like going through these positions as we go through them since I haven't done any drafts yet and I'm not going to for a while. So you're learning as I learn about the draft pool. And I came in not really liking first base at all, but I don't mind it at all now.
It's just that middle part is not great. But if you like, it's either you go early or you wait, essentially, outside of Mountcastle, as you said. That's kind of where
it looks. But I mean, also like Ty France, I mean, I'm thinking about it, and I don't mind that either. You know, yeah, like
all of a sudden
he's gonna play every day, right?
He is. He's gonna hit for a decent average for that position with some thump. Like there's something there. And then Rizzo, like I told you, we talked earlier, Rizzo kind of he's growing on me because at least we've seen it. Where some of these guys are just like, what are we doing here? Like it's kind of crazy. But yeah, that's what'll make it fun. It'll be a lot of fun. We got more moves to come. We got second base next week, Toby. Second base, which is an interesting position, as Ben can attest to in these drafts. Deeper than you think. Might not be great, but much deeper than you think. Let's put it that way. So that'll be a fun one to talk about next week. Any final thoughts, though, before we wrap it up? We'll record next week, and then we'll take the week after Christmas in between New Year's off.
Tour of Shame 2.0. Hitting the road, March 31st, 2023. Hop on board now before it's too late.
Love it. Absolutely love it. We're looking forward to it. I cannot wait, because the fact that Toby was able to find that many different gifts in 2021, that was the probably the most amazing part of it all. Like I would have been like using the same one after like the third try. That was impressive.
In 2.0, do I have to use
gifts that I haven't used? I think you can start from the beginning. I think it's only fair to start from the beginning. But you have this same thing that you can't reuse throughout the season, because that was impressive. That was very impressive. Cool. We'll check all that out. Again, we'll be back with you guys next week. If you guys missed it last week, we previewed catchers. A lot has changed already since then. But we told you guys going into this, this is the first look. We'll give you the full preview later on as things settle and more drafts are going on, like actual fab leagues are going on. And the fun really begins. But for now, check out Toby on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. I'm at BD Entrick. This was Bubba and Batflip, episode 139. Catch you guys next time.
Hey, Drew Scott here, and I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.